Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
You might have heard over the weekend the former US President Donald Trump indicated that if he loses to Kamala Harris in November, he will not run again in 2028. It was a rare moment of political normality from a campaign which has featured two assassination attempts, the sitting president dropping out of the race after just one debate, and unfounded allegations about people's pets being eaten for food. So, with just 6 weeks to go until polling day, how do both parties weigh their chances of success? And what are the defining issues that voters will ultimately use in deciding who to vote for? To discuss this, I'm joined from the United States now by Executive Director of the American Conservative, Kurt Mills, and by Democratic National Finance Committee member, Lindy Lee. And you're both welcome to the programme. Lindy, I'll start with you. I know you've been directly involved in the fundraising effort for the Democrats. We've spoken about this in the past, and we saw at the weekend that Kamala Harris has managed to raise $27 million in a single fundraiser on Wall Street. Now, is that unmitigated good news in your view, or does it undermine her message that she's on the side of the regular middle class American against the big money interests?
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Well, as a co-host of the event you were just talking about, some of the tickets were not high level at all. We had tickets ranging from a few hundred dollars to $1 million. So there was a whole range. And most of her contributions are actually quite small, like $10, $20, $25. And it's just, this is definitely unmitigated good news because it underscores the fundraising advantage. It's been an avalanche. Just last month, it was reported that she raised $631 million, which is approximately three times Donald Trump's war chest. So it's an indication that the American people are incredibly excited. The wind is behind their backs. And I'm actually going to be hosting her in Los Angeles on September 29th in the afternoon for her very last fundraiser of the season. She herself would not be at any more fundraisers after that day, but Walls and other surrogates will. But okay, she will be focusing on the campaign.
All right. Well, let's bring Kurt in at that point. So, Kurt, three times Donald Trump's war chest. How rattled will he be by that fundraising gap?
I don't think he's a fan of fundraising gaps, but I think it's a real question about how much this money really matters. There was a Times piece about a week ago about the Trump campaign getting relatively pummeled in digital spending. I think that's, relevant. But beyond that, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars here. If you look at the last 12 years of presidential cycles, you basically see a split decision. Romney outraised Obama, Clinton outraised Trump, and Biden outraised Trump. So that's, one out of three went to the big money candidate. Mm-hmm. I do think it's helpful. I think no candidate would turn down the money. I would emphasize to your listeners that it is not the ball game, not even close.
Doesn't guarantee a win, is what he's saying, Lindy.
No.
It doesn't guarantee a win, but I'd rather be with the guy with the money than the guy without, especially if your guy is hampered by four indictments, numerous lawsuits. So this is, and the way that he is handling his clients is just has been a train wreck. I have no other way of putting it. But not to mention the cryptocurrency scam that he's running these days. Did you see? Just 4 days ago, he unveiled his newest scheme to the American people. If he hadn't had enough of Trump stakes, Trump University, what was it, Trump water? What else was there? Trump NFT. If you didn't get enough, there's always Trump crypto now.
Trump crypto, Kurt, is that a thing?
Yeah, I think they're calling it the World Freedom Coin or something like this. Yeah, I mean, look, this
the
is Donald
Liberty.
Trump. The guy's almost
World
Liberty. I suppose you're better briefed. Yes. Look, this is Trump. The guy's entering his ninth decade soon. He's not going to change course now. This remains an incredibly close race. I just don't think, Trump being Trump is really going to change anything on the margins at this point.
It's interesting where the money is being spent on the Republican side, because Donald Trump wants the bulk of it, Kurt, I've read, to go on TV ads. And that is a point of difference as well when it comes to the Democrat campaign, where they're spending a fortune on online ads. Do you think he's made the right call?
Mm-hmm. It's very Trump. He comes out of television, and I think that a lot of his voters are more working class and more likely to be responsive to TV ads. I see no reason why it won't work. I do think, again, I'm not just trying to play the devil's advocate here on the Harris thing. I think Harris is up. But there is a question of whether or not Harris is just exciting her own troops, getting the core Democratic supporters very amped, and are we about to see a repetition of all the shock nights of recent years? Because mm-hmm. no matter how well Harris is running her campaign, and I think it is relatively well run. Trump surprised in 2016, and people forget he surprised by even more. In 2020, the polling margin was even more, and we just don't remember because Biden won. So, look, 40 days out or so, this remains an extremely tight race. The truth is that nobody here in the States knows.
Yep, and that is absolutely true. Lindy, your party has described Donald Trump as unfit to serve, dangerous to U.S. democracy, cozying up to dictators like Putin, and just plain weird. Now, if all of that is true, what does it say about Kamala Harris that the race is still incredibly close? Because in saying all of that, does she run the risk of making the mistake that Hillary Clinton did when she said Trump voters were the deplorables?
Well, I have two things to say to your point. Thank you for the question. The first is it's not just Democrats saying that. Republicans like Liz Cheney, Republicans like the former Lieutenant Governor of Georgia, Jeff Duncan, are saying the same. Hundreds of Republicans who worked for Ronald Reagan, the standard bearer conservatism, came out and endorsed Kamala Harris because Trump is beyond unfit. He is a traitor to our country. I'm not going to mince any words. That's just what he is. I'm a naturalized American. I feel so lucky to be an American. My family fled China. And so to be an American is the greatest gift I've ever gotten. So it breaks my heart to see someone terrorize our Congress and commit all of these felonies. But to your point, the polls are actually shifting ever so slightly in Kamala Harris's direction after the debate. You see that happening in the most important state. Now, I am a little bit biased as a lifelong Pennsylvanian myself. Pennsylvania is the whole ballgame. Mm-hmm. If she wins here, she wins the White House. And you see the polls shifting in her direction after her decisive victory here on September 10th. And that is why our camp is hoping that Trump will agree to another debate on October 23rd under CNN. But he is saying that he won't.
Yeah. Can I ask you, Lindy, about...
If I were him, I'd be terrified too.
Okay, can I ask you, Lindy, about the debate? Because despite the fact that there seemed to be fairly widespread consensus that she won, the gain for her in the polls have been really slow and quite marginal.
Well, this is an election of margins. This campaign is going to be won on the margins. It's all about that. 1% might seem measly to everyone, but 1% could make all the difference in the world. I want to remind our listeners that 2020 came down to 40,000 votes scattered across the seven battleground states, especially the blue wall in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, my home state. So the margin is where it's at. That's the end all be all of this race.
Mm-hmm. Kurt, I want to talk about the assassination attempts now and the rhetoric in U.S. politics that we've heard in recent years. Much of that has come from Donald Trump himself. Like, he's boasted about wanting to beat the hell out of protests. When the looting starts, the shooting starts, does he need to reconsider his own language, and has he?
I don't think we're seeing much of a change from the man himself, and that's not me for me to hear, not for me to say whether or not he should. Again, the man's not going to change course in his ninth decade. I will say the thing on the assassination front is that the narrative in the mainstream press is so much of sort of right-wing lunatic young men who are involved in these sort of spree shootings. And the reality is it's actually way more of a mixed bag. We've seen a number, especially on the lawmaker front, attempts on lawmakers' lives. We've seen a number of people who seem basically coded by insane left-wing propaganda that have taken, shots at lawmakers in recent years. There was the Steve Scalise attempted assassination at the congressional baseball game. So this is a problem across the country of politics getting amped up. And yeah, sure, I think leaders should try to tone it down. Mm-hmm. I'm just not sure we have those leaders on the ballot in November. It is what it is. I think it's pretty choppy waters for a little bit longer.
Are you concerned about these 100 high-profile Republicans, many of whom served under Trump, who say that he's not fit to serve again?
I'm not concerned for his electoral chances. I will say, I know it's a different country, but just across the way, it's a little bit like saying, you know, all the Tony Blair people hate Jeremy Corbyn. These are factional disputes. These are ideological disputes in the party, and these are the losers of Trump's takeover of the Republican Party. She cited somebody else, which I think is a little bit more relevant, at least for the electoral chances.
Jeff Duncan,
the lieutenant governor Jeff Duncan of Georgia. Yeah, I do agree with you there. There's very little reason why Trump should have all these fights with the Georgia statewide elected or recently elected, you know, sort of old guard. And then you have seen Trump, who's not an idiot, try to patch things up there with Republican grandees. Most notably, he had a terrible row with Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia, over the summer. He quickly passed it up. Trump and Kemp are on the same page. Trump needs Georgia. Looks like Trump's up in Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Do you support Donald Trump, Kurt?
We are a nonprofit magazine, so we are not endorsing this election.
You're not endorsing any candidate, and it's not a case of you're not endorsing this candidate.
We're not endorsing any candidate. It's a legal designation in the United States.
Okay, let's move to what's been happening in the Middle East, because there is concern, I know, on both sides that this could have a big influence on what happens in this election. If President Biden, Lindy, can't get a ceasefire over the line, the violence keeps escalating, as we have seen happening in the last hours and days. That's going to hurt Kamala Harris's support with younger voters, Arab Americans and progressives too, isn't it?
Yes, and I think that's precisely Netanyahu's point. He wants to help Trump. He came out this weekend and said he's not going to agree to a deal in the next 45 days. I'm wondering what's going to happen 45 days from now. Could it be an election? So this is I believe it's a very intentional gambit on Netanyahu and Trump's part. They've been bosom friends for a long time. He's close with Jared Kushner. But you know what? I'm heartened by the fact that Kamala Harris, her rhetoric is differing from President Biden's, in that she said she's not going to stand idly by as the atrocities unfold. And this is critical for people in my generation, people in their 20s and 30s, who are very angered, very concerned about what's going on in Gaza.
Okay, and Kurt, Donald Trump says that he's a great friend of Israel. Then last week he said that if he lost this election, the Jewish people would have a lot to do with it. Is he hurting his own cause with statements like that?
I don't think he's hurting his cause. I do think it reminds people of the sort of complex relationship that Trump does have on the Israel issue. This is not a straight neoconservative Bush wing, rah-rah, you know, undiluted support of Israel Republican candidate. This is a far more complex creature. And I agree with my co-panelists here. I do think this issue is I do think this is an issue for young voters. And I think if the Republicans lean in too hard to the maximal Israel line, especially as this war reaches yet more controversial stages, you know, they are playing with fire electorally. The reality, though, is that the issue has receded from the fore compared to where it was 6 months ago. I mean, this looked like this could take out Biden and take, well, it did take out Biden in part, but this looked like it could take out the Democrats' chances in the spring. You don't see the protests that you saw around graduation time last spring. School's back here. It's a lot more quiet. Again, that doesn't, you know, excuse any of the violence or make it less important on a moral level, but in a political dimension, Israel is less important than it was 180 days ago.
Mm-hmm. What is important
for now, anyways?
Kurt, what is it? Is it the economy now?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, it's the conventional wisdom. I think that this is a race for the for the Republicans to win if they can drive home their messaging. I mean, if you look at the core issues, if, you know, where all these voter surveys, immigration, crime, foreign policy, the economy, the sense that, you know, the sort of felt sense that things were just better 5 years ago, whether or not that's justified or not, I actually sympathize with that argument quite a bit. If Trump and Vance just pound that message into the sand, I think they will win this election. The problem is it doesn't look like we have a fully well-oiled machine there. And so it's far more of a hazy picture than it probably should be for the Republicans.
And Lindy, on the economic picture, we know it's complex, but poll after poll shows us that Americans do feel worse off under Biden and the Democrats. You know, if that becomes the defining issue for voters, Kamala Harris will lose.
Yeah, and that's why she's going to unveil another series of economic proposals just this week. She understands that, and that's why the keystone of her campaign right now is the opportunity economy. She gets it, but I want to remind folks that inflation is under 3% now, and inflation is a global phenomenon. It hit every single country on the face of the earth, and America emerged more strongly and more resiliently than all of our global counterparts. And yes, accumulative inflation over the years has caused suffering, and she understands that. That's why she's unveiling proposals like the child tax credit that will ease families' burden by $6,000. And she's going to help with the first-time homeowners' down payments as well. And these are proposals that will help people like millennials who are building their homes and families right now. So she completely understands. And like James Carville said, it's always going to be, it's economy stupid. And that's going to be true for every campaign.
All right. Well, listen, we'll leave it there. But thank you both for joining us today, Kurt Mills and Lindy Lee.